does he do? He might go all the way. He gives it away. It's a chance. It'll be a goal. He can. Come at the moment. Come at the champion.
You are listening to the Swans Blog's Swanscast, the number one Sydney Swans fans podcast. After two stunning wins, you know, the Swans, they just couldn't get it done in the end against the Pies. They had to two men after halftime. They busted their guts, you know, but the class of Collingwood was just too much in the end. More injuries, more rampy shenanigans, and an AFL draft done. There's plenty to discuss. We've got the review, the good, the bad, the ugly, the clown files, social guff, and the usual stuff. I'm Justin Mitchell, your host, and with me is the number one Swans Blog ticket holder, no longer the only ticket holder, Joshua Maher. Joshua, thank you so much for joining me again on this cold, wintry, almost Monday evening.
Old, wintry, almost Monday evening. Mate, I don't know what it's like in Melbourne, but up here it's bloody freezing. They got 24 centimetres of snow on Mount Hotham today, so wow. It's a bit on the cold side.
Yeah, it's a bit, a bit nippy in Melbourne as well. It was certainly a bit fresh in the morning and then the evening, and a bit of rain around, so I'll take the rain over the snow, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure all those Melbourne Demon fans are going to be happy that the snow up on the snowfield seemed their season's going to end early when they were expecting to be playing a grand final.
I thought they were already up there going snowboarding and skiing by the way their players are playing. I mean, that was an atrocious game.
Nah, mate, they're all up the Ovens Valley. They're out there hitting up the cheese factory so they can fill their platters back up.
Yeah, that's the next thing that's going to happen. The next home game, cheese platter and a pair of skis. So... good old Melbourne, you can always rely on them for the weekend punchline, and their punchline this weekend's pretty bad anyway.
Yep, it certainly is.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of things to talk about at the top of the show. So top of the agenda is we've got our injury situation is still, it's not improving at all. Every week now we're getting two more on the injury list. So Josh Kennedy has been confirmed a knee medial strain. So he's going to be out for minimum 2 weeks. The news from the club today is they're expecting him after the bye. So that's round 14 at the earliest. Now, depending on the severity of the strain, Joshua, you're more medically trained and inclined and knowledgeable than I am.
But no, typically I don't know anything about sports injury. They're usually 3 to 4 weeks at the minimum.
Yeah, it's two minimum if you're lucky, but probably more like a four-week injury. So, you know, in the good side, we might be looking at maybe round 15, 16 at the latest. So between 14 and 16 would be a good return, Josh.
Yep. So after the bye, gives someone an opportunity for the next 2 or 3 weeks at least to get in there and have a go.
Yeah, exactly. And George Hewitt suffered concussion in the match roughly about the 10-12 minute mark of the third quarter. He went for a concussion test, although you could see him coming off the field. There was no way he was coming back on. And the prognosis is good. He will be available for Geelong this weekend.
Excellent.
We also have the AFL mid-season draft. So this is the first one since... the 90s sometime, I think like 93 or 94, somewhere around there. And the AFL, they did an article where they showed some of the really good picks that were players that were picked in the AFL mid-season draft. And some of them have been like really good players, club champions, not quite legends, but you know, very good, very well-known players. This time around though, Josh, the I don't know if the quality and depth was there as there were in the 90s, certainly in the 80s. It's a bit of a mixed bunch, this one.
Yeah, and certainly the noise coming out of the media this week has been that none of the recruiters were actually raving about the depth in any way, shape, or form. So you wouldn't want to be hanging your hopes on picking up a Luke Parker or a Dan Hannabry sort of type in a draft like this. But, you know, they're all speculative picks, and if you find something that works for you, then well, good on you.
Yeah, look, I don't think anyone could possibly be as bad as Paul Donuts Chambers and, D-Rex to T-Rex Derek. So, look, they were some astoundingly bad players of any club in AFL football. So, look, we took two picks. We had two picks because Heath Grundy retired and Kurt Tippett retired. So that gave us two mid-season draft picks. The Nick Smith long-term injury gives us the capacity to upgrade one of the Category B rookies, which we are very hopeful. I think I can speak for both of us here, Josh. Very hopeful it's going to be Sam Wicks.
Yeah, I'd like to see Sam Weeks come up into. He may not actually get a selection in seniors, but certainly be eligible for selection in seniors. Yeah. Would be a good thing.
Oh, he's cracking on. He is looking absolutely superb in the NEAFL. He is having a really good season. But we'll just chat a little bit about the players that we've picked up. We're going to pretend we know anything about them. I mean, apart from, you know, basically they're very one-sentence wiki page entries. But you're looking at Cody Hurst, who's a 19-year-old, 178-centimetre small forward. He broke Stephen Hill's agility records in a 2018 draft combine twice. He had an injury early in the season that basically rubbed him out of the entire 2018 TAC season, and he tested off the charts on some of the things. So he is a very good small forward who averages 4.5 tackles a game, and he was regarded as an elite prospect for that small forward tackling forward role, Josh.
That's an interesting pricey you've just given there. I wonder what his expected position in the national draft last year was with a write-up like that. I mean, that's not uncommon for a player to get injured and then just miss out on the draft or at least drop a long way. Even Adam Goods dropped a long way in his national draft. He was expected to go a lot higher than he did. It was only the broken hand that had his game time down a little bit. He wasn't noticed as prominently by selectors as he probably could have been. So that might be a good future pick there.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess, a similar role to what we have now with Ben Bronk, or certainly Tom Papley in years past, and a little bit what Sam Weeks is playing at the moment. So I think the closest comparison would have to be the Sam Weeks role. So I would guess that's who he's going to be competing with directly when he joins the club. The second selection, the one I'm actually quite happy about, and I'm excited to see how he's going to go in the NEAFL. I think he should play either this week or next week, depending when he's up in the city. But his name is Michael Knoll. He's a 26-year-old ruckman who played 4 years of college basketball, came back to Australia 3 years ago, a bit over three years ago, got in contact with the Box Hill Hawks, a VFL club, just said, oh, let me try out. I want to see if I can play football. And they lent him, and he played, I think, he's in his third season now, so he played two at Box Hill, and he moved to South Adelaide. And he's been performing quite well at South Adelaide, so he was on the radar for Essendon as well, and Essendon also needed a ruck. So I think this is a good pickup, you know, all things considered, with our ruck depth, which is pretty much non-existent at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It does a couple of things. It gives us some surety over the next, you know, a couple of seasons. I imagine he won't be cut at the end of the year. But it probably also puts Darcy Cameron on notice, actually.
Yeah, it really does. But I think it also gives us, you know, a fair bit of support as well. So we desperately need that kind of support. And we've really been lacking it for quite a long time with Sam Naismith being out injured for so long. And I believe it was Kinnear Beetson who said they went for this pick specifically because Sam Naismith is missing a lot longer than they expected him to miss.
Yeah, but I just wonder whether that means he's going to be missing more than they've said. So after he had his arthroscopy, they were saying sometime after the bye, but or I wonder if they're now banking on him not getting back this season. So
yeah.
It's, you know, depending on which way you take that statement, would sort of tell you where Sam Naismith's at.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say he's going to be missing for most, if not the whole season, which is a shame. And they haven't said anything. There hasn't been any update at all about his progress.
No, they've been very quiet on him, haven't they?
Yeah, and the last info we had was he started running and doing running exercises before he had the knee arthroscopy, which was back in, I think, March or early April. So it was quite a long time ago. All right, so let's kick on with the reviews. So it was Friday night. We typically do these podcasts on Sundays, but Sunday was a bit of a ride off for myself, and I couldn't do it. So here we are Monday. We've had a bit of time to sort of think about the match, Josh. Mm-hmm. Were you generally happy with the performance?
Yeah, I was generally happy with that. I think if you looked at the match in isolation, you would go, oh, it probably wasn't as good as it should have been, or, you know, we were really sort of non-competitive for patches. But if you're looking at it in the context of the year, the statements the club said about where the list is at, how they're, you know, rebuilding without actually saying the word rebuilding, it's a good effort. It's a good competitive effort for, you know, 3.5 quarters. Probably just cleaning some stuff up, especially the beginning of the second quarter, and maybe a bit of a disposal, you know, sort of from the middle of the fourth onwards, you'd probably actually net that win. Getting through that game without any injuries as well would net you a win. So, no, I was pretty happy with the game in the end. It would be among our best for the year, even though it was a loss.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people on social media who, like, they lauded the game. They said it was our best performance of the year. I still think the North Melbourne game was our best performance, not just because it was a win, but for what we were able to do for 3.5 quarters and then hold on by the barest of fingernails, you know, the skin of the teeth, essentially, to just clinch that win against almost insurmountable odds and just a tidal wave of pressure. I was quite happy with the Collingwood game. Second quarter was pretty typical. We've seen that second quarter more than a few times this year. But for them to turn around in the third quarter, kick 5 goals, limit Collingwood to 2, but to do it the way they did it, and with Callum Sinclair after getting his ass kicked, what it seemed like at halftime, it was a nice turnaround. And for Reed and Franklin to combine for the last 3 goals of the quarter to put them 10 points up at three-quarter time, it was a good result.
Yeah, I thought it was a great result. I think, too, that one of the things that the Swannies aren't getting credit for in that game was just how significant the impact of losing, you know, Josh Kennedy and George Hewitt out of the midfield before halftime. If you take Pendlebury out of their midfield, they're not going to win that game, you know. And I think, you know, probably the Kennedy injury, just getting smacked in contested ball after he went off the field, was probably the difference in the end. And I know we're going to have a bit of a chat about Dane Reinfe later on, but I don't think you can put this one, as bad as that was, I don't think you can put the loss down to Dane Reinfe solely.
No, and we don't. I mean, it's fair to say that on the night, I was very dejected and...
Yeah, that's not the word I would use.
Frustrated, very upset, I'm putting it diplomatically. For
explosive.
Explosive is probably how you would describe my performance on social media privately afterwards. This is not using the Swans blog channel, mind you. This is using my own social media with Josh and a few of the other ones. I think we're all a little bit disappointed after the match. But yeah, that mistake turned a maybe goal into a certain goal and pretty much certainly ended the match. I'll go through some of the stats, and it's quite phenomenal just how much Collingwood dominated. They ended up winning by 7 points in the end. The Swans had, I think, 6 or 8 inside 50s to 2 in the first 10 to 11 minutes of the fourth quarter. And all we could muster in that time was 2 behinds. And that was Will Hayward shanking I wouldn't say a gimme, but a pretty damn gettable goal. So any one of those shots that we had at the start of the fourth quarter, they're converted to goals, I think. Maybe that's enough for them to hold on, or certainly force it really, really deep. So, yeah, look, disposals, we got obliterated in disposals by 56, 317 to 373. We got obliterated in inside 50s again, 47 to 63, so that's minus 16. Collingwood had better disposal efficiency and efficiency inside 50. Annihilated in hitouts. It was 27 to 69. That's a 42 differential. It is amazing. We had 11 less clearances, 38 to 49. We had that. Most of those were stoppage clearances, negative 9 on those. We had negative 16 contested possessions. So I think we're still like the second lowest or lowest ranked team for contested possession differential. It was 137 to 153. And unfortunately, had more turnovers by 7. Got outdone in marks, which is something that we really beat them on the last time we played them. But the really good thing was we smashed them in contested marks, 17 to 11. So, yeah, tackles are pretty close, and they had 5 more tackles inside 50.
A lot of those numbers really shouldn't surprise people, though, when you consider how good Brody Grundy is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the difference in, you know, probably depth and class that they've got compared to what we're fielding at the moment. And, you know, losing Hewitt and Kennedy just basically seeds the contest to him anyway. And a lot of those turnovers will be from the fourth, trying to get out of our defensive 50 as well.
Yeah.
So at least with this game, you can go, well, there's reasons this time other than just, you know, not showing up for three quarters of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm relatively upbeat about what we saw the other night.
Yeah, I am too. I thought the first quarter was pretty good. We certainly had Collingwood's number. They were very active, and we controlled the ball very well, and we got good scoreboard pressure. And to be honest, we looked like at one point we could have scored a bit more. They came into it later on in that quarter and, you know, got their foot inside the game, so to speak. You know, they got their foot in the door and pushed their way through. Second quarter, it was all them. And look, I gave Dane Reinfe a bit of a whack in the play ratings because he deserved it. His antics.
Yes,
I'm not going to say he cost us the game. although it's very easy to say that. His antics did not help us in that game at all. He did some amazing defensive stuff. He did some amazing brain explosions too, the likes I have not seen an AFL defender do for some time, unless we're talking rants. And fortunately, he didn't punch anyone, but that would have been the only thing he didn't do in the match that would have annoyed people. But he and Aaliyah in that second quarter were amazing. Callum Mills was pretty damn good, and Malikan was getting in the right positions as well. But
yeah
without Aaliyah and Ramp in that second quarter, I think we don't have a chance to get back into it.
No, I think Rampy, just the, you know, the perceived pressure of being captain and trying to come up with some kind of sensational thing to get them over the lines probably put a bit of pressure on him and has caused some weird decision-making, and I'll leave it at that. I'm glad you brought up Lewis Melikan, because he was a Melikan this week, not a Melikant. he had a pretty good game. You know, he's starting to show a little bit of consistency again, and that's clearly got to be Mills' best game of the year.
Yeah.
Like I said, there was a lot to like about it.
There was, and look, the one thing that we're positive when it comes to Lewis Melikan, and the one thing he's good at is getting into the right position when the ball's bombed in. And people would say it's very Grundy-like, but Grundy had this knack of reading the play before, probably two steps ahead. He knew where the ball was going to go two steps ahead. So no matter the fact that he was as slow as a wet week, he could always get into the right position. He was always able to outbody his opponent and spoil the player before the ball even got near him without, you know, infringing on them. And that's something that Malikan has to learn. But he showed some signs of that on Friday night when he was able to get into at least the right positions to take intercept marks and spoil the ball, which is a positive thing.
Yeah. Yeah, his worst games are when he gets isolated and they're able to torch him on a lead.
Yep.
In which way he's really no better or worse than Harry Marsh was a couple of years ago. Except for at least Harry Marsh had a bit of closing speed, and Lewis doesn't really have much speed at all about him.
No.
But if we can play into his strengths, you know, he'll be just fine. I think he's still got that potential to be a good, solid, you know, second tall defender. But you got to get him the right matchup.
Yeah, and fortunately, our midfielders, the last 3 weeks, they have figured out that they actually have to run both ways, which has been a dramatic turnaround from the first 6 or so weeks where they look like they could only run one way. So, yeah, it's watching them put on defensive pressure in the midfield has been a revelation. I don't know if it's been an internal revelation, but for me as a supporter and a watcher, it's been, oh my God, we're actually playing football again. We're not doing that under-12s nonsense of everyone just running, 18 players running in one direction, and the opposition just kicks it over, and oh, that's a goal. So, yeah, and I think that's really helped the defenders being able to deal with that constant pressure, because all the inside 50s have been just tack balls. And you look at Collingwood's inside 50s, they had 63. I reckon maybe 20 of them were genuine hit-up lead passes, and most of those were intercepted. The rest were just bomb, 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 just like North, just like Essendon. And you know, the commentators, they criticise the teams for doing it, but when you've got a packed defence of 16, 18 players and basically your 60 metre zone, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
So it's not so much a flooding thing. I think it's just a work rate thing. And the younger players have figured out how to do it. It's now just getting their strength and fitness up to be able to do it consistently.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely agree with everything you just said there. And you can see it too. You can see it at the sort of the 10, 12 minute mark of the fourth quarter for the last 2 weeks now. Some of our younger blokes are clearly struggling to run out the game. Nick Blakey, while not completely gassed like he was last week, was still looking a little bit flat.
Yeah.
You know, O'Flow looks a lot better for that this year, but he's still not quite getting to the end of the game.
Your Will Haywards and your Tom McCartans, they also look like they're struggling a bit as well. Jordan Dawson is another one who looks like at the end of the game he looks pretty much spent. And there was...
That's no surprise, because Dawson doesn't have... Pineapple Boots doesn't have a terribly big tank. So he... You know, there's no surprises here. Will Haywood has had a couple of almost games for the year. And he was... I'm not really sure what the go was this week and last week. He sort of seemed thereabouts. You know, he seemed to be around the contest, but never sort of quite got involved. And he dropped a couple of marks he should have taken, and he's blown a couple of goals he should have kicked. And
yeah,
drawing that extra bit of attention, I guess, because people are starting to pay notice to what he can do and what he could be. I think teams are starting to put a little bit of effort into him.
Yeah, and he plays a lot of positions. Like, he can play wing, he can play flank, he can play almost full forward, he can certainly play forward pocket. So the opposition teams are giving him a quality opponent wherever he goes, because he can do a lot in different areas of the field. It's good to see that these players are building their strength and their stamina. They are probably, I wouldn't say a victim is the right sort of word, but they're in a situation where they're kind of forced to play in this way because of circumstances dictating it. Players traded in the off-season, players delisted, players injured, senior players coming to the end of their career. I mean, Malakin might not have played so much this year if Heath Grundy wasn't injured. Callum Mills would have played midfield if Nick Smith wasn't injured. Sinclair probably would have played in the forward line if Naismith wasn't injured. So, you know, the team makeup wouldn't even look the same as it does now, and it'd probably be much older and much more experienced. And we might have been able to beat Collingwood if we didn't have such youth and inexperience. But that's, you know, that's part of football. That's what happens. You get an opportunity, you seize it.
But they're competitive, though. The last 3 weeks, they're competitive. They're two wins from three games in the last couple of weeks, but they look competitive.
Yeah.
Even in that loss. And this is why I can't buy the crap that gets sold about Carlton at the moment. Oh, we've got a young list. And you sort of go, well, there's quite a few teams that have a young list at the moment. They're not capitulating like those blokes are. So, you know, and there's a lot of teams with big injury lists as well. And I don't understand why all of a sudden people are cutting the D's some slack because they've got a rather large injury list all of a sudden. So, but I'm quite happy.
Well, Melbourne's got a very good side across the field. They've got a lot of quality and a lot of experience in a lot of different areas. They are just playing dreadful, absolutely horrendous football. And
so will we at the start of the year. But no one said, oh, you know, it's because, you know, they've got some injured players or they're young and inexperienced. No. And the club owned it. They basically just came out and said, well, we're playing like crap. We can't play three quarters. We can't even play one quarter at the moment. And there's the reasons. It's just lack of effort. The D's are going, oh, it's because, you know, so-and-so's injured. And
yeah, which is BS.
And, you know, the 66 rule has killed us. Yeah. And, you know, we can't win the clearances and that kind of garbage. And it's Carlton's nonsense. Going, oh, you know, it just it's absolute nonsense.
Can't win the clearances. The biggest load of bullshit ever, because they smashed every club last year in clearances. They were by far the number one clearance team last year by some margin. It wasn't an AFL record, but they were a long way ahead of the next best. And they averaged, I think it was about probably three more clearances per match. They were phenomenal last year. And we still managed to beat them at the end of the season, or at least draw close. Yep. So, yeah, it's just a whole lot of noise and nonsense.
A whole lot of misdirection. And I guess the reason I bring that stuff up, I'm glad we're not doing that. We're not doing the whole misdirection thing. It's just that this is where we're at. This is where we're going. And, you know, I think if you look at the last 3 weeks, you sort of nod your head and go, righto, we're going the right way. These other teams, just looking for excuses.
Yeah, and I think the it was like a bit of a public jab, a little bit of a public challenge, almost to the pricking the Swans players' pride about a month ago when a couple of weeks in a row, Longmire's gone, we can't play a full game yet, we can't play three quarters, we can't even play a quarter of consistent football. And he said that for like 2-3 weeks. And I think he was just looking for a bit of a response to that. But as soon as he said the R word, bang, the players responded the next week. And their quality and consistency of football has been up to the required level. Sure, they're not going to get it right every week, and he keeps saying that. Not going to get it right. There's going to be speed bumps. There's going to be, you know, a couple steps backwards, a couple steps forwards. You know, we're going to have setbacks. That's going to happen with a young and inexperienced side. All you can ask is four quarters of effort. And what have we had in the last 2 weeks? We've had two thrilling wins and a close shave.
Very narrow loss.
With the grand finalists from last year, who we could have and possibly should have beaten if a little bit more luck went our way.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. The effort's there, just the class and the polish isn't, and that will come with time.
Yeah.
As long as they've got effort.
Quality players three quarters will develop. Yeah. And we still have some good quality coming through the NIFL as well. So Matthew Ling, who's well regarded as a back flanker. Sam Wicks, another academy prospect. We're big on Sam Wicks. Me personally, I've watched all the NIFL games. He, except for last week, he's been amongst like the top two or top three players every single week. if he gets upgraded, he is the next player to debut. He has been absolutely amazing. And Harry Reynolds is wearing old Harry Marsh's number and looks an even better player than Harry Marsh ever looked. And he's, what, 18, 19 years old?
Excellent.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the players. Sam Reed, career best game. He had an AFL player rating of just under 30. He was the highest rated AFL player from the round, and Triple M didn't even have him in their top three players of the week.
What? You're bloody joking.
I'm not joking. They put a poll up on Twitter and they said, who was the best player for the weekend? Was it Basher Hooley, Todd Goldstein, or Jack Gunston? Now,
Todd Goldstein? What?
Yeah, and I put a comment. I said, neither player were the best player on the ground in their games anyway, so what the hell?
How does Todd Goldstein get in that list and Brody Grundy doesn't? Honestly.
Because
honestly,
it's a Triple M list, and they love Todd Goldstein.
Yeah, good point.
It's Triple M. I mean, it's the Nuffies on AFL, literally on radio.
That's true. Having said that, I did hear Damien Barrett say that the best Indigenous player of all time the other day was Adam Good, so he gets a slight reprieve for me. Yep.
Yep.
So Sammy Reed, career best game.
Yep.
Absolutely career best game.
Yeah, 15 disposals, 11 contested possessions. He had 8 score involvements and his 6 goals, 9 marks, 6 of those were contested, and 5 of his 9 marks were inside forward 50. And the most impressive thing was he went into the ruck and looked like he could ruck, and he actually beat Brody Grundy a bunch of times and nullified him when he was in the ruck. So that was the most impressive thing for me.
He actually looks like he's got some confidence in his body this week. He did come out and say that the words from Matthew Lloyd from a couple of weeks ago really sort of hit home, and that Lloydie was probably right. I thought Lloydie was probably right too.
Yeah.
But he actually looked confident in his body. He actually went a little bit harder. He put the body on Grundy. He worked hard. His mitts were really good. Gee, I'd want to see some more of it though before I start getting too excited. Yeah. But if he can do that, 9 times out of 10 for the rest of the season, I'll be pretty bloody happy.
Well, that's the sort of form he showed back when he was 19, 20 years old in a 2012 premiership year. That's what got everyone excited. That's why the Swans paid him big money as a 20-year-old to stay with the club.
Yep.
But Luke Parker, 28 disposals, 21 of those contested, 550 metres gained and 8 clearances, 33 pressure acts. His game was ridiculous, and he got most of that in the second half when it was just him in the midfield.
Yep, phenomenal. He I think he's been questioned a little bit over the last few weeks, and certainly, I guess, when Horse threw down the challenge a few weeks ago by sort of insinuating the R word was in play, that the senior guys have got together at some stage and said, right, we got to stop this. This is the line in the sand moment for us, and he certainly said something to that effect in the media within the last 2 or 3 weeks. So he's throwing the challenge down. He's picked it up himself, and he's absolutely leading from the front at the moment.
Yeah, it just looks like the pride's been pricked and they've just gone, nah, enough of this. So
absolutely.
A couple more. Aaliyah, he had 16 disposals, 9 intercept possessions, 6 marks, 2 of those contested, and he had a bunch of pressure acts. I believe it was about 8 or 9. One percenters. But I felt that it was his second quarter in particular that was the major turning point. We've sort of touched on that, so we'll go on to the next player. Ryan Clark finished with just 14 disposals, but importantly, Sidebottom had 13 disposals, none in the first quarter, 4 at halftime, and had literally no impact whatsoever on the match.
No, that's true. And Ryan Clark has been noticed by AFL media pundits for that effort as well. So,
yeah, 2 weeks in a row, he has comprehensively taken and shut down and beaten a side's number one attacking player. So he did it to Sean Higgins. Sean Higgins only got off the chain last week in the last quarter when the side was out on its feet. And he locked down Sidebottom and made sure Sidebottom didn't get off the chain at all. He did a great job.
Excellent job.
Callum Mills, he was probably our best ball user out of defence, 18 disposals at 72%. He had 5 marks, 2 of them contested, 6 intercept possessions and 9 one percenters. That was probably one of his best defensive games, certainly the best game from him of the season, and he looked very solid.
He looked very solid, yep.
And little Ollie Florent, 7 in disposals, 10 contested, 7 intercept possessions, 4 clearances and 5 tackles. Where there's a will, there is an Oliver Florent trying to burrow through a pack and get the ball out.
How much longer do you think we can get away with calling him little Ollie Florent for?
Well, Probably this podcast.
He's not that weedy kid he was a couple of years ago,
no,
is he?
No, no. He's buffed up a bit. He's not looking like a ripped man yet, but he's not looking like that little stick figure that'll get blown over in a breeze. So he's doing pretty well for himself.
He's working on the iron, that's for sure.
And he has proven himself this season to be more than capable of winning the hard stuff and decking a few guys in some pretty tough tackles.
Yeah, he's come a long way.
All right, time to look at the Player of the Year votes, Josh. So I'll get you to kick the Player of the Year votes off, please.
Yep, so with one vote, we've got Callum Mills for finally showing us some form again. Second place, Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark for another amazing shutdown job, this time on Iron Bum. Alira Lear comes in with three votes, with another great game. Luke Parker, four votes, leading from the front. And, of course, five votes has to go to Sam Reed for that career best performance that he dished out the other night.
Yeah, I'd say that Luke Parker's been a little bit stiff in the last couple of weeks, because there's two games he's played in the last 2-3 weeks where he could have been the best on field, and he's just been bested by something just that little bit more. So, yeah, he's right up there in the pointy end, as the leaderboard suggests. So the gap from first to second has been dramatically closed down, Josh. Josh Kennedy still leading the way on 19. Luke Parker comes in at 17. Alira Lear, 14. Florent with 13. And George Hewitt with 12. So George Hewitt has skyrocketed back up the leaderboard. All right, then. We're going to be right back after this break.
Welcome to intermission.
And we're back. All right, so now it's time to go on with our Monday champions and Monday villains. So I'll kick things off. Josh, my Monday champion is a controversial one, I think. And it goes to none only...
Yeah, I can't see where you're going to go with this.
Purple Army Ross Lyon. Yes, so, look, it was a dramatic finish to the match on the weekend. It was probably the most celebrated point after Tony Lockett's point in the preliminary final after the Sorum. Hit the post, and Fremantle just pipped Brisbane Lion. It looked at one point like it was going to be a draw, but look, Ross Lyon has turned that club around from a bit of a laughing stock into a genuine finals contender this year, and they're right on the coattails of the top four as well. They are playing some pretty damn good football.
He's done a good turn in that rubble around the last couple of years. There was a lot of questions about whether he was the right man for the rebuild, and you know, he's doing just fine. So
yeah. Now your Monday champion, please.
Luke Parker mentioned it a few minutes ago. Look, Luke Parker was just missing in action for the first 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks of the season, and you know, once the challenge was thrown down to the playing group, him and Josh Kennedy and those senior guys have really picked it up and ran with it. But Luke Parker's improvement in performance the last 3 weeks especially has been astronomical compared to where he was at the beginning of the year. You know, while JPK was, you know, kind of slow by his standards, he was still having a reasonable impact on the game, whereas Luke Parker often had absolutely none whatsoever. But he looks fantastic at the moment, so he's my Monday champion for turning it around.
Yeah, I like it. Luke Parker has been absolutely fantastic in his turnaround, and I think he's taken it within his stride to really lead, just like Rampy has. Monday villains, I'll kick it off. My Monday villain is Melbourne. We touched on it before. Their performance on the weekend against GWS Giants, and let's face it, the Giants are probably the worst travelling team to the MCG by a margin, and then some. Yeah, there is like the top 16, 17 teams on the ladder, then there's 30 feet of shit, and then there's GWS Giants at the MCG. What did Melbourne do? Yep. They made them look like premiership heroes at the MCG. They kicked 3 goals at 3 quarters, almost as bad as what we did in that elimination final, and they looked utterly dreadful and played like assholes. So, yeah, Melbourne's my villain.
Did they have something like 9 points or 12 points or something at halftime?
It was 2-1 or something at halftime. It was a shocking scoreline.
Disgraceful.
It was disgraceful. And this is a team who can't play at the MCG. They got absolutely spanked last time they played. Hawthorn just played keep things off and they beat them easily. So I don't know what the hell Melbourne were doing.
Shocking. They've just been absolutely shocking this year.
Yep, your villain, please.
My Monday villain is North Melbourne, but not for the Brad Scott thing. Well, it's related to the Brad Scott thing. Who am I kidding? I don't know about. Did you watch the game? They were really good for three quarters, and then it's like about as good as North Melbourne are going to be for three quarters.
Yep. And then the Dogs got like 5 goals in a row and were up by 20 points.
Oh, it was shocking. Yeah, so they were really competitive for three quarters and then absolutely just choked. It was the biggest choke job that was about to happen. And they rallied. They rallied and they lost the lead and they got it back again and they snatched the win at the end of the game. And it was entirely led by the playing group who was on the field, right?
Yep.
It was entirely the leadership group. And I thought, why have you guys not been able to pull that out for the last two seasons?
Yeah.
You know, it's between the players' ears. They're a much more capable team than the crap they've been showing for the last 2 years. And that's why I'm making them my villain. To some extent, Brad Scott leaving is a good move for them, and to another extent, I feel sorry for him because a lot of the problems that club has had has just been the playing group just not responding.
Yeah.
And just some terrible free agency moves as well. But that's just the senior coach, that's the list management as well. But it's they're just my villain. And I still don't know what they stand for.
No, no one knows what they stand for, and I was going off on them on social media. My own personal channel, not the SponsBlog one, but I was going off on them on social media because it's his last game. Everyone knows it's his last game. They're up by 3-4 goals, and then they just play some of the most utterly dreadful football for about 25-30 minutes, and it almost horrible. Looked like they gave up the game at three-quarter time, and the Dogs are just going to walk away with it. And then something happened, you know, it just switched. They just got the ball and started using it again and started playing actual football. And let's face it, the Dogs aren't that good. They're not very good. They shouldn't be playing finals. I'm still disappointed with
them. No, they're just, and I don't know why they continually get pumped up, especially by those idiots at Triple M.
Oh, they love them.
You know, they do. I think they're still in love with the story from 2016.
Yeah, they've got one of the most aggro, bitter, disappointed coaches who always seems like he's just utterly disappointed at everything.
Rocket.
So, No. He's always having to go with Barrett about something. Has a problem in personal life. It's Barrett's fault. He cut his finger while chopping up the carrots. It's Barrett's fault. So, yeah.
Well, blaming Barrett for everything is not a terrible move, but anyway, moving on.
Yep, ran out of toilet paper. Barrett's fault. He was in the garden, you know, shaking the leaves. He couldn't get it done. So, look, that's that for villains. Time for our clan files. All right, Josh, we have our four nominations and our clown of the week. Could you please kick it off with the first nomination, please?
First nomination for Clown of the Week is the one, the only, Brian Taylor. Brian Taylor for calling Alir Magic Door. Because it's just one of those things where, you know, I can fully understand how BT would have done this. He would have gone, oh, there's a Sudanese guy out there. That must be Magic Door. Because Magic Door's the only Sudanese guy in the entire competition, isn't he? And not only, like, it'd be kind of okay if he sort of said it and then went, oh, I'm sorry, you know, it's the other one. He didn't even correct himself.
No, just
and I don't like BT. So, BT, you're a clown.
Yeah, he seems to be getting one of these a week almost. He just keeps screwing up someone's name. He did it last week as well. I can't remember what he said the last week. But, yeah, it was pretty funny just watching it. Oh, Magic Door's got the ball. What? So, yeah, it's... look, the next nomination is also another defender. A few people said this one should be our Clan of the Week, but we've got an even better one for Clan of the Week. It is the one and only Dane Rampey. So Dane Rampey gave away a 50-meter penalty. We touched on it before. Turned a kind of potential goal that Chris Mayne... I mean, this is Chris Mayne taking a set shot for crying out loud. I mean, you can't even...
He's just as likely to put that out on the full.
Full, exactly. And what does he do? He runs around in the circle and then jumps forward, except he jumps about 10 meters past the mark. Okay, he kicks
10 metres. No, he's Superman.
He was Superman. He jumped so far past the mark, it was unbelievable. 50-metre penalty. It became a result for Collingwood. It was a guaranteed game then. So, you know, this one still tried to get another score. But, Dane Rampey, you get a nomination for giving away that 50-metre penalty. Nomination.
And that's the last we want to hear from you in this segment, Dane Rampey, for the rest of the year. That's twice, no more.
Now, your next nomination, please.
Don Pike.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't know what the hell Don Pike was thinking last week, but when the Adelaide Crows team selection came out, Bryce Gibbs had been dropped again, and the Adelaide Crows faithful went absolutely freaking apeshit over it. Don Pike was saying that it was because he lacked consistency, and I thought, well, how inconsistent could Bryce Gibbs be in last week's game? Because I watched most of that game, and I thought he was okay. So I went and pulled up the stats, and here's Bryce Gibbs. 22 disposals, 5 tackles, you know, 6 clearances, 2 goals, 6 or 8 contested possessions. And I thought, that does actually, you know, that doesn't look like a bad game. And if that's what inconsistent is, well, I'd hate to see what consistent looks like. So I just think that's just a clown move. And not only was it a bad day at the selection table, they then went on to lose.
Yes, this exactly. week. And the funny thing about the Bryce Gibbs situation is his name is being bandied about in trade situations. So he got to go to his home club, the one place he wanted to go. And Don Pike has just chucked him on a scrap heap and been like, nah, we'll put you in the reserves and we'll just call you out when we need you.
Yeah, absolutely scapegoated. And if you look at, you know, you talk about consistency. If you want to look at someone in that team who's inconsistent, have a look at Tex Walker, because he's done bloody nothing this year.
And Josh Jenkins as well.
I don't understand the selection. I don't get it at all.
No, it's just favourites. And Don Pike, I think, has been one to go with his favourites. He's shown a track record of doing that over the years. But look, our next nomination, this is a non-football-related nomination. I wanted to do a Formula One nomination, but everyone told me it's not the right podcast for this. So, thanks. I was going to nominate Renault for this one for screwing up Danny Ricciardo. But our next nomination comes from the League One final between Charlton and Sunderland, with the winner going up to championship in the English Football League, League One. Charlton had an own goal early in the match. A back pass from their centre back was just this tame little pass. The goalkeeper has completely switched off, just tried to flick out his foot, completely missed it, and the ball just rolled into the back of the net. Now, that was Sunderland's only goal, so they went and scored another two goals. So, good on them for winning, but that is the funniest thing you can see. It's on Fox Sports. Highly recommend you to go and watch it, because it is an absolute clown move. It is hilarious, and it's unbelievable. It's been labelled one of the worst own goals in football history. It's just that bad.
It's shocking.
Yeah, it is hilarious.
It's a shocker. It's an absolute shocker.
It really is. Now, it is time for our clown of the week. We have clowned him before, or certainly in our pre-clowning segment, we've discussed him before as a villain.
This is well deserved.
It is well deserved. This. It is a dual Brownlow medalist who has unfortunately done this more than once this season and should have been suspended. Gary Ablett. So,
the Little Master.
Little Master has done 3 bumper bar elbows, which he gets suspended for. He got fined for one. He finally lost the plot and punched a player in the face on the weekend and got away for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been offered a week. I'm sure he's going to decline. I mean, how many close shaves has he got to have? Well, you know, I'm not talking about his head either. That little ball patch he's got up there. But how many near misses has this bloke got to have before he figures it out? Stop waving your arms and elbows and hands around at people's faces.
Yeah,
and he can't even say that this was a stoppage. The ball wasn't even in play. So I would be surprised if they actually challenged this one.
Yeah, it was stupid. And had he actually been suspended for the first one, which he should have been suspended for the first one to begin with, he wouldn't have done this again. And so he didn't get suspended for the first one, and then he had 2 more, what they call the bumper bars against North Melbourne. And then now he's gone for striking a Gold Coast player. He's played 330-odd games or so with an unblemished record. And he's, 35, 36, and he finally gets done for striking in what could be his last season.
Oh, yeah, and so ends the dream.
Yeah.
The AFL's dream of Geelong winning a premiership and Ablett getting another Brownlow.
Yep, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yep, so, Gary Ablett, you are our clown of the week. Thank you very much for playing,
well
Gary
deserved.
Ablett. And with any luck, you
thank
miss...
you. Please come again.
Exactly. And you miss for our match on the weekend, so that is a bonus for us. Now it is time to do our social stuff. We put a question out. I believe you actually put the question out this week, Josh. So why don't you run us through this social segment?
Righto. Well, I put this question out a couple of days ago, knowing full well that it's actually a bit of a loaded question and, you know, it could produce a little bit of controversy among the various pundits out there. And it was basically this. Who was the best player to pull on the number 39 and why? Is it Reg or the Wiz? Being Kappa, Warwick Kappa, if you don't know who the Wiz is, you're probably born after 2005. Two club legends at opposite ends of the ground, and they couldn't be more different in the way they play and the way they carry themselves. So,
look, before you go into the responses, I think anyone who hasn't heard of Kappa has been living under a rock, because the guy was a male stripper. He was a lollipop handler. He did naked photo shoots. He did everything he could possibly do to make money. And he did this after 2005. He was a male entertainer, like, not that long ago.
Man, if you were born in 2005... Yeah, but if you're born in 2005, you're only 13 or 14 years old by now.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that one. You're probably not really going to know it's a 13-year-old. And if you do, what are you looking up on the internet?
Yeah, well, you see a bloke in incredibly tight shorts.
Yep.
Sonny from Facebook says, Wazza could be in the team of the century. Few could match his aerial gifts, and he was a superb kick on goal. Whatever you thought of his personal life, he had talent to burn, and yes, very short. Speedo's probably covered more. Reg is the epitome of craft, guts, and composure. A true blood in my book. Wonderful defender. God, I don't know. It's impossible choice. Just so pleased they played for us. Yep, yeah, fair enough.
Yep.
And nearly everybody who answered the question all came out with, gee, it's a tough choice. Like, it's a tough choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you could give 39A and 39B, you would. But to be honest, I don't know who I pick, because Grundy's going to be one of the best fullbacks for us. And yeah, it's a tough one. Peter from Facebook, he said, if it wasn't for Miller getting rid of Kappa, he would have been a true Swans champion. I don't believe this man did anything good for the Swans. He gave Longmire and Carey away for nothing. Funny thing, Miller ended up at North. Go figure. Yes. So the funny story behind that is that Warwick Kappa was actually sold to Brisbane for money. And he went to Brisbane also to earn a bit of a paycheck. But the Brisbane facilities at the time were basically portable sheds. And the coach at Brisbane, who I can't quite remember who it was at the time, refused to play him because Kappa wanted everyone to kick the ball to him. So there's a really interesting story on the internet where he did an interview about his time at Brisbane. He said it was the worst career move he could have ever made, and he completely regretted it at the time. And as far as his football career goes, he still regrets it.
Yeah, I think that was an episode of Open Mic, actually.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Heather from Facebook, if the number 39's Warwick Kappa and Heath Grundy were twins, the only way you'd tell them apart would be their collective low-key off-field demeanour. Past career. that's gold. Past career as a Gold Coast Meter Mate, tabloid media profile, and blonde tips. Actually, they both have had blonde tips.
They have. When Grundy started, his hair was blonde.
Well done.
She forgot to put in the male escort and the male stripper and the lollipop man. The traffic controller. This guy's done everything. It's hilarious.
Good. Jason. Good work, Heather. Good work. Brilliant.
Jason from Facebook, he said, Kappa kicked 100 goals against the likes of Langford, Frawley and Savani, amongst other greats. A lot of them were in the team of the century in their respective sides. Love Reg, gonna miss him doing his job week in and week out, but Warwick for me. Yeah, the other amazing
fair
thing
enough
was... there was a period, I think it was 1986, when Sydney scored 200 points 3 games in a row.
Yeah.
And all they could do was win one final.
Yep.
Yeah, that was with Kappa.
Rhonda from Facebook. Hard to decide as they play totally different roles on the field. Who is more beneficial to the footy team? A flashy, eye-catching forward who is more interested in theatrics or steady, reliable, rocking defence? For me... the informer, dependable defender wins every time. Well played, Reg. Be interesting to see who next gets to wear number 39.
Yep. Yep. Love it.
Fair
Maybe
enough.
Maybe they should retire the number.
Maybe they should.
Yep.
I've got another one here that I've actually just gone and dug up off the Facebook page, because one of the things we put on that social question was funny responses get extra points. And I think Heather's got it, but I just want to read this other one that's up here. So Dave Williams has got, both had equal merit as footballers, so it comes down to who had the most success as a recording artist. Wiz wins it, but only just. Then, the next comment below that is Richard Bastion, and he says, but Dave, where would Channel 9 be without Reg Grundy?
Oh, I love it. Love it.
It's well done, isn't it?
Oh, man, it'd be great if we could still see Warwick Kappa running around with those leopard speedos and blonde
hair. Oh, no, that's enough. No, no, no. Next segment.
Next segment. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Time for the good. My good for the weekend, Josh, was Sam Reed clunking it. So he took 9 marks and 6 of those were contested.
He had a massive game.
He had a massive game. It looked like Sam Reed from 2012. Now, I've had this discussion many, many times, and I can trace back to when Sam Reed lost that confidence, and it was a 2013 match against North Melbourne where he had his shoulder sort of crunched in. After that, he just seemed to not be able to mark anything at all coming his way. Some of the marks he took were generally very good marks, especially that Isaac Heaney inside 50 where he just shoved the defender out of the way and took almost an uncontested mark.
Yeah, he had a great game. Like I said, I'd want to see a little bit more of it before I get back on the Sam Reed bandwagon. Like, we've literally only seen him for like 8 games in the last 3 years. but the signs are promising.
They are. Now, you're good, please.
Ryan Clark.
Yeah, like
mate, I've gone from a well, I wouldn't say a hater, but I was pretty close to an absolute bloody lover the last 2 weeks. He had a massive game. And we said he wasn't a defender and that he should be an on-baller.
Yep.
But I don't think we thought he'd be a tagger. And I tell you what, if he can keep doing that and we can free Hewitt up to go and actually play more as an extractor, gee, yep. I'd be bloody happy with that. But Ryan Clark, ripping game.
Yeah, it seems like the midfield's kind of got a bit of balance again with Cunningham out injured, so...
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a good one. He's been a good fit. The bad? My bad is the commentators. I don't know what it is, but the quality of commentary is so, so bad these days. It is unbelievable. I literally tune out of any match that has Basil Zemplis on it. Almost any match that has BT... Definitely any match that has BT and the guy who commentates the Olympics has a massive crush on Cyril Rioli and claims he loves the Swans. What's his name? Macca something or other. McAvaney. So I don't even remember his name. That's how much I like him. Anytime Darcy is on from the Western Bulldogs, you know, just tune me out, I'm out. So, and also BT-isms and... Dwayne Russell's, or whatever you want to call them. Just the commentary team, the quality of commentary is just so bad since the old firm retired. It is just shit.
Shocking. Except for that one game a year where they go to Adelaide and you get to hear Dennis Cometti again.
Yeah, exactly. I miss Dennis Cometti. I never thought I'd say it, but I really miss him. But look, you're bad, please, Josh.
My notes here are really good. It's just 3 words. Demons are shit. Look, I mean, we actually talked about it earlier.
Do we even need to talk about it again?
No, probably not. They're just shit, and they shouldn't be using injuries as an excuse. They were favourites. They were favourites to make a grand final this year, and they just haven't shown up, and now they're just reaching for excuses. So I had a bit of time for them until this week when they started trying to trot out those sort of, oh, we're injured, oh, 666 has wrecked us. And it's just like, well, no, just your effort's not there, you know. You know, I know we've talked about how those things have affected Sydney, but the number one reason why we were doing so badly was just lack of effort. And the sooner those guys are honest with themselves, the sooner they can start turning it around. But, yeah, the Demons are shit.
Their effort has been so, so bad this year. It's been stunning just how bad they are. The ugly. My ugly was North Melbourne almost throwing the match against the Western Bulldogs. Brad Scott's, you know, going away game. Think, you know, what's the one thing you want to do to say thank you to the coach? You want to go out on good terms. That 35-minute patch was putrid. I was ready to throw the remote at the TV because I was so frustrated. at how they were performing. Yeah, I don't really like North Melbourne. In fact, I don't like him at all. I kind of despise him. But he's not a bad guy, Brad Scott. And for a club who are playing a lot worse than what they should be playing, to treat basically one of the longest serving coaches I've had for quite some time like that, I think was just deplorable and disrespectful. And as it is, it's come out that basically he was fired in the end anyway. So,
yeah. I'm glad they got it back. I'm glad they got it back on track. But, you know, actually that game, when you look at it, that game is really just it's like a microcosm of the last 10 years, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Up and then
good for patches, choke it away, sometimes get the win again.
Yep. Now you're ugly, please, Josh.
Carl Tank.
Yeah.
Good old Carl Tank. I've had a bit of a soft spot for Carlton for the last 2 or 3 years, but they, like, I'm not even a Carlton fan, even they're bloody disappointing me now. Look, they got absolutely pantsed in Sydney last week. Like, there's no other way to put it. And then, and that was after getting pantsed a couple of weeks beforehand, and they came out and categorically said, we will not get pantsed like this again, and then they go out and lose by another 100 points, which would be okay if they actually fought for the game, but they just didn't even bloody show up. They were shocking. So fast forward this week, the club's making the right sounds. The leadership group has a meeting with the rest of the players without the coaches there, and they lay it down with each other. They have good, hard, honest conversations with each other. They actually have a decent team selection for this week going up against the Saints, and they blew it.
Yep.
They absolutely blew it. They didn't show enough for me. And I think that game probably put the nail in Bolton's coffin.
Yeah.
They're ugly. They're very ugly. They speak a lot. They don't follow through with action. Their club president's nowhere to be bloody seen. Like, where's Lagudisha at the moment?
Exactly.
And the only person who seems to be saying anything about Carl Tank in public is Juddy, and that's because he's on Footy Classified and Caro keeps hitting him up.
And so, even then,
Carl Tank.
I don't think he wants to say anything because he is. If Carlton were a ship, it was a Titanic. And if Judd were on that ship, he would literally be one of the band members at the moment. It doesn't matter what tune he's saying, what tune he's singing or playing. It's going down and he's going down with it. So, yeah, I think if you look at the Titanic movie, Legodos or whatever his name is, he's trying to be that Zane character who's trying to dress up as a lady and trying to get off the ship. That's what he's trying to do. John's stuck. Yeah. He can't get off the ship. He's on that merry-go-round until it ends, so... Yeah, and
he's out there as a bit of a decoy, isn't he?
He is, and Brendan Bolton's long gone in the engine room. He's sorry, Brendan Bolton, but that ship's already going, and yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. I know Stephen Park, one of our regulars, he is a big fan of Brendan Bolton, being a Tasmanian, and I genuinely feel bad for him because he deserved better, but it also, you must question, was the list management and the team building there to begin with? Was the right staff there to begin with? And three, did he even have the coaching chops? So it's interesting questions. And one that we're not going to delve into, but it's one that Carlton has to figure out in the future. And they're going to have to go through the ridiculous selection panel again to probably pick another beginner coach again and play like arseholes for the next 10 years. I'm sorry, but
yeah, ironically, it's musical coaches which has led them to this position anyway.
Yeah, they are ugly at the moment. Well, that's it for tonight's show. It went a little bit longer than we expected it would. Might tip in at the hour mark, but lots to talk about, lots of good content, Josh. So thank you so much for coming on again.
Pleasure to be here.
As always, guys, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter with the tag The Swans Blog. We also have the new Swans Blog page, which is the Swanscast podcast. So jump on that, like us, follow us, comment. All of our regular podcast stuff will be coming from that channel. We'll be cross-posting it, but it's all going to be on our Swanscast podcast. You can get in contact with us during the week using the hashtags Swanscast and Swanscast Extra. Until next time, Josh, go Swans.
Go Swannies.